Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the health report and explorations, coming up after As It Is.
Hello and welcome back. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington with the program that helps you learn and improve your American English. While you listen and learn, today you will also hear about efforts in Greece to deal with a large number of foreigners who are coming to the country. Then, some science news. The American Space Agency says its MAVEN vehicle has given them much useful information from the planet Mars. Those two stories are straight ahead, and here is part one. Greece is a main entry point and passageway for African, Asian, and Middle Eastern immigrants seeking a better life in Europe. The European Union has been pressuring the Greek government to slow the influx of people. 2 years ago, officials began an operation to detain migrants and asylum seekers. Some of those people say they are targeted, yet have proof of permission to work and live in Greece. Katie Weaver has more on the story.
In a small shop in Athens, a group of African immigrants has met to talk. They speak softly and quietly. They worry others might hear them. Chuck Sibe is the owner of the shop. He tells VOA he has been in Greece for 20 years without official papers. He says most of his store's customers are Africans.
They don't accept you as a black man. Even my shop here, it's once in a while you can see a Greek person. I was being patronized by foreigners. I'm African brothers. But the Greeks, before they come, maybe it's late night, they're desperate in need of it, they will come to you. Some will put hey, this is a black man, they leave.
Chuck Sibe is the father of five children. He says the Greek government does not recognize his children as Greek citizens.
The children, they're born here. They don't care about them. They don't give them money. They don't give them citizenship.
No paper.
It's a problem. I have five children here. I have that here, but they see them as a foreigner.
Daniel Ekuchuku has lived in Greece for 13 years. Every 6 months, he has to pay 600 euros to extend his permit to live and work in the country. But Mr. Ekuchuku says he cannot work now. He says the last time he went to extend his permit, he was told to return after 6 months.
The woman I meet there, I tell her, see how many years I'm staying in Greece with this paper, and I paid everything. I paid my tax. I was working in the airport. I'm a good worker. You people stop me work. My company paying 350, 250, depend what I make in a month.
Another immigrant says he has documents that enable him to live in Greece, but police stop him often.
Imagine a policeman can ask you in this country to lie down on the floor. Even if you show him the paper, he will still ask you to go down on the floor, just for nothing.
Human Rights Watch says Greek police have detained tens of thousands of people suspected of being in the country without permission. The group released a report on the issue last year. It says people who appear to be foreigners are stopped often. It says sometimes police search their belongings and insult them. The report says there are even examples of physical abuse. Human Rights Watch also says even those with legal documents are stopped and taken to police stations. It says they can be held for hours while officials verify their documents. The group also noted that Greek officials have a right to control immigration and a duty to improve security on the streets. But Human Rights Watch says they should also regulate police powers. I'm Katie Weaver.
You are listening to the Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington. Scientists working on the year-long American mission to explore Mars hope it will help solve the mystery of how the red planet lost most of its atmosphere. Speaking to reporters on Tuesday, the scientists said they are surprised and excited about the amount and quality of the information the spacecraft MAVEN has provided so far. Christopher Cruz tells us more.
MAVEN reached Mars in late September after a 10-month-long journey. It had traveled 711 million kilometers from Earth to the red planet. NASA says MAVEN is the first spacecraft ever made to study the upper atmosphere of Mars. MAVEN will measure the rates at which gases leave the Martian atmosphere. Scientists hope the information the spacecraft gathers will help them learn how the climate of Mars has changed over time. Scientists say carbon dioxide and water control the climate. They believe if they can discover the history of Mars over the past 4 billion years, they will come to understand how the planet changed from a warm and wet climate to the cold, dry climate present today. Scientists began working on the project 11 years ago. One of the mission's top scientists said the mission will look at how the processes involving the sun and the solar wind affect the gas at the top of the atmosphere and strip it away to space. Bruce Jakoski leads the mission. He is a professor in the Geological Sciences Department at the University of Colorado in Boulder. He said Tuesday that 7 of the spacecraft's 8 instruments are already providing information to scientists. He says much more will be received from the instruments in the next few weeks.
What we're seeing so far is really just a tantalizing teaser of what's to come.
Even this early in the mission, when the instruments are only being tested, scientists now have the most complete picture of the red planet's upper atmosphere that they have ever had. The instrument testing will continue for about 2 weeks. Scientists hope to begin the actual science mission early next month. But Professor Jakoski says the quality of information already sent back from MAVEN is better than he and his colleagues expected they would get.
I'm looking at the science team, some here in the room with me, some distributed, and just seeing an incredible number of really excited people that are just beside themselves with the quality of the data we're seeing already. Just this morning, my administrative assistant told me that for the first time in months, she's hearing me whistling again as I walk down the corridor. This is going to really be an exciting mission, and we're just ready to get on with it.
5 times during the mission, the spacecraft will move to 125 kilometers above the surface of the red planet. During these deep dip campaigns, MAVEN will travel in an area where the upper and lower atmospheres meet. This will give scientists information about the differences between the two atmospheres. The spacecraft will also try to find out if human beings can survive on Mars. The space agency is working on plans to send humans to the planet in the 2030s. I'm Christopher Cruz.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Thank you for spending some time with us today. This is VOA, the Voice of America.
The Health Report is next, followed by Explorations. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health Report. 5 million American children and teenagers have attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, commonly known as ADHD. ADHD makes it difficult, if not impossible, to stay with a duty until it is complete. Catherine Ellison knows the problem well. She is a mother who was always yelling at her son to be quiet, to sit still, to stay on task. She did not know that he had ADHD. She also did not know that she had it too. Ms. Ellison wrote a book about the issue with her son, Buzz. VOA's Faiza El-Masri talked to her about Buzz, a year of paying attention. Buzz Ellison is a child who had many problems in elementary school. He could not sit still. He did not pay attention to his teachers and could not focus on the task at hand. As a result, his mother says, he was always in trouble. He also got bullied, and his teachers gave him a lot of negative feedback. His mother, Catherine Ellison, is a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter. She did not understand why he behaved the way he did, and she admits that her behavior was only making the situation worse.
I was making things worse, often by being anxious or being impatient or not understanding him.
So the mother and son teamed up to write a book about their experience. They explored the world of ADHD for a year. They researched treatments and doctors. Peter Levine is a doctor of children's medicine in California. The pediatrician specializes in treating children with ADHD. He says there are many misunderstandings about the disorder.
Other parents will blame them for it because they see the way these kids are acting, and they'll say, what's wrong with you? Why can't you control your child? And so the parents will blame themselves. Another misconception is that the child really isn't trying, because oftentimes these kids are trying harder than other kids to control their behaviors, and that leads to a lot of difficulties and frustrations.
Mr. Levine says the first step in dealing with ADHD is getting the facts straight.
This is a highly inheritable disorder. They can't get over ADHD. I mean, it's not just something that you can make go away. As many as two-thirds of children who have problems with ADHD will have difficulties as adults. You can't cure it. You have to find ways of coping with it.
He says that one of the most effective ways to deal with ADHD is to change the way you parent. And that's what Catherine Ellison did. She says she is now paying more attention to her son, spending more time with him, and giving him more positive feedback. And Buzz is reacting well to these changes. He has fewer outbursts at home and at school. He is more centered on schoolwork. And he has a new interest, playing tennis. And that's the Health Report. I'm Anna Mateo.
Music.
Welcome to Explorations in VOA Special English. I'm Mario Ritter. This week, we tell about one of the most recognizable objects in science fiction, the laser. It is one of the best examples of how technology can go from the science of the future to everyday use in a short period of time. Faith Lapidus and Steve Ember tell us about the history and many uses of the laser.
Laser stands for light amplification by stimulated emission of radiation. The idea behind lasers is complex. Just how complex? Consider that it took the mind of Albert Einstein to discover the physics behind the laser. Theodore Maiman succeeded in building the first working laser in 1960. Mr. Maiman worked at Hughes Research Laboratories in Malibu, California. A laser fires a light beam. Before the laser, scientists developed a similar device, a maser, which stands for microwave amplification by stimulated emission of radiation. A maser is basically a microwave version of the laser. Microwaves are a form of electromagnetic radiation, similar to but shorter than radio waves. The best known use of masers is in highly accurate clocks. In the 1950s, researchers in the United States and Russia independently developed the technology that made both masers and lasers possible. Charles Townes was a professor at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in Cambridge, Massachusetts. He and his students developed the first maser. Russians Nikolai Basov and Alexander Prokhorov did their research in Moscow. Their work led to technology important to lasers and masers. The three men received the Nobel Prize in Physics in 1964.
The idea of a thin beam of light with deadly power came much earlier. By the end of the 1800s, the Industrial Revolution had shown that science could invent machines with almost magical powers. And some writers of the time were the first to imagine something like a laser. In 1898, H.G. Wells published a science fiction novel called The War of the Worlds. In it, he described creatures from the planet Mars that had technology far beyond anything on Earth. Among their weapons was what Wells called a heat ray. Listen to actor Orson Welles describe the weapon in a famous radio broadcast of The War of the Worlds from 1938.
I shall refer to the mysterious weapon as a heat ray. It's my guess that in some way they are able to generate an intense heat in a chamber of practically absolute non-conductivity. This intense heat they project in a parallel beam against any object they choose by means of a polished parabolic mirror of unknown composition, much as the mirror of a lighthouse projects a beam of light. That is my conjecture of the origin of the heat ray.
H.G. Wells' description is not too far from the truth. All lasers have several things in common. They have a material that supplies electrons, and a power source that lifts the energy level of those electrons. And, as Wells guessed, many lasers have mirrors that direct light. Laser light is different from daylight or most electric lights. It has one wavelength or color. Laser light is also highly organized. Light behaves like a wave, and laser light launches in one orderly wave at a time from its source.
You are listening to the VOA Special English Program, Explorations.
The physics of the laser may be complex. Still, it is just a story of how electrons interact with light. When a light particle, or photon, hits an electron, the electron jumps to a higher energy state. If another photon strikes one of these high-energy electrons, the electron releases two photons that travel together at the same wavelength. When this process is repeated enough, lots of organized or coherent photons are produced. In Theodore Maiman's first laser, a rod of man-made ruby supplied the electrons. A more powerful version of the flash on a common camera was used to lift the energy state of the electrons. Mirrors on either side of the ruby rod reflected and increased the light. And an opening at one end of the rod let the laser light shoot out, just like the flash ray of science fiction hero Buck Rogers.
Our flash rays are working like lightning now. They destroy everything in their path.
Industry put lasers to work almost immediately after they were invented in 1960. But weapons were not first on the list. The first medical operation using a laser took place the year following its invention. Doctors Charles Campbell and Charles Coster used a laser to remove a tumor from a patient's eye at Columbia Presbyterian Hospital in New York City. Since then, doctors have used lasers to cut and remove tissue safely with little risk of infections. Other health uses include medical imaging and vision correction surgery. Eye surgeons use lasers in LASIK operations to reshape the cornea, which covers the lens of the eye. The reshaped cornea corrects the patient's bad eyesight so he or she does not have to wear glasses or other corrective lenses.
Lasers have made measurement an exact science. Astronomers have used lasers to measure the moon's distance from Earth to within a few centimeters. Mappers and builders use laser technology every day. For example, drawing a perfectly level straight line on a construction site is easy using a laser. Energy researchers are using lasers in an attempt to develop fusion, the same energy process that powers the sun. Scientists hope fusion can supply almost limitless amounts of clean energy in the future. Lasers have also changed the way we communicate. It is likely that laser light on a fiber optic network carried this explorations program at least part of the way to you if you are reading or listening online. Super-fast internet connections let people watch movies, and send huge amounts of information at the speed of light. Manufacturers have used lasers for years to cut and join metal parts. And the jewelry industry uses lasers to write on the surface of the world's hardest substance, diamonds.
Since 1974, the public has had direct experience with lasers at the grocery store checkout line. Laser barcode scanners have changed how stores record almost everything. They help businesses keep track of products. They help in storage and every detail of the supply process. Experts say no company has put barcode technology to better use than Walmart, based in Bentonville, Arkansas. By 1988, all Walmart stores use laser barcode scanners. Highly detailed records on its products and how they were selling helped Walmart keep costs down. Today, Walmart is the world's biggest corporation.
Lasers are found in many products used almost everywhere. Laser printers can print out forms and documents quickly and are relatively low in cost. They are required equipment for offices around the world. If you have a CD or DVD player, you own a laser. Laserdisc players use lasers to accurately read or write marks on a reflective coated plastic disc. A device turns these optical signals into digital information that becomes music, computer software, or a full-length movie.
Over 100 years ago, writers imagined that beams of light could be powerful weapons. Today, lasers guide missiles and bombs. For example, pilots can mark a target invisibly with a laser. Bombs or missiles then track the target with deadly results. And yes, American defense companies are working on giant laser guns, science fiction fans everywhere. But there are technological difficulties. Scientific American magazine says huge lasers turn only about 20 to 30% of the energy they use into a laser beam. The rest is lost as heat. That has not stopped scientists from working to perfect powerful lasers that one day may be able to shoot missiles out of the sky.
Your announcers were Steve Ember and Faith Lapidus. For transcripts and audio of our programs, go to voaspecialenglish.com and visit The Classroom to find activities for English learning and teaching at VOA Learning English. I'm Mario Ritter. Join us again next week for Explorations in VOA Special English.